Hello, welcome to Strange Love of Movies. My name is Olivia Martinez, and I'm here with my two co-hosts, Oscar and Emily Martinez, and this is episode 9 of our Coen Brothers series with The Man Who Wasn't There. This is following one of our favorite Coen Brothers films, O Brother, Where Art Thou? And this one is very, very different. Would y'all say the same?
Well, I mean, it is a comedy. A dark comedy.
It's so dark.
But it also is kind of a period piece, which O Brother was. So, but in every other way, it's very different.
Yeah, it's definitely a crime thriller. I think it's described as a neo-noir.
Definitely.
First of all, it's in black and white. And if you're a fan of movies from that period, right after the war, World War II, again, very dark themes with murder and treachery and embezzlement and some really dark things that came from post-war America, which is really interesting, right? Because America was just coming off this high of winning this war, but then there were some dark psychological undercurrents.
Probably, yeah, a lot of killers had come back from the war, some pretty brutal men and women around.
That plays a part in this movie where there's somebody who's a war hero and then, well, maybe he isn't, you know, and that kind of thing. So people are not who they seem, maybe. And the main star is Billy Bob Thornton. He plays a barber. He cuts hair. And he's the man who wasn't there because he's almost like a cipher. He does a good acting job because you're never tuned out, but he's just kind of sleepwalking through life, wouldn't you say? And he's married to Frances, of course.
Yeah, I think that this is probably the only Coen Brother film where the lead is just so boring and it's purposeful. And we all know people like this where you just look at them and you're like, how do you exist?
It doesn't seem like he's depressed or anything.
No.
He just has nothing to say. And it really seems like he doesn't have anything that he's interested in.
We know people like that though, don't
yes,
we?
I think so.
Very strange.
And let's name them right now.
Yeah.
But I think that Billy Bob Thornton does an excellent job. Frances McDormand does a great job. And then who would you say is the number three? James Gandolfini or ScarJo?
Yes.
Scarlett Johansson is randomly in this movie. This was one of her first roles. And yeah, and then James Gandolfini, he's great in it. And
Richard Jenkins.
Richard Jenkins.
That's a good job.
Who plays the co-barber?
Oh, yeah.
That's Michael Balducci, I think is his name.
Yeah, he does a great job,
too. He does a really, really good job.
He's the best comic relief. Yeah, because, I mean, when I say it's a comedy, I mean it's a very dark comedy. It's a satire.
I misspoke earlier. His name's Michael Badalucco, and if you recall from last week, he played Babyface Nelson.
Yeah.
And don't call him that to his face, though.
He's a great actor.
Yeah, he's really good. Really good character actor. But you're talking about Scarlett Johansson. She was only 4 years removed from Home Alone 3 when she made this. So she was like 17 or 18. Because we always thought Lost in Translation, that was her first. That was her breakthrough. But she was in this one. It was weird. She looked so young, too.
She did, really. I think she was probably supposed to be a 16 or 17
she looked
year
it,
old. And she looked it.
But
yes.
That was a weird situation and a weird character.
Yeah. I don't think it was really nowadays. Again, this film was made a few years ago. I think now somehow anytime you saw a man take an interest in a young girl, I think your mind would go somewhere. I don't really think that he was interested in her romantically at all. He really was she was somebody who stood out to him as maybe just an innocent, in his mind, brilliant talent. And so, obviously there were things in life that he valued, but he's just a really weird guy.
Yeah, he was, because he aspired to be something. He wanted to be her manager. He thought she was this great concert pianist. And then you find out she stinks, right?
Which is
and she kind of knew she stank, too. Right?
Yeah, she was not passionate about it. She was like, gee, mister, I didn't ever thought or considered playing piano professionally.
Yeah, and then Frances McDormand, did we mention her? Yeah, I mentioned he was married to her, but yeah, she played a big part.
And really the main, I guess, just to kind of summarize the plot.
I know, we haven't even done that. Oops.
Yeah, it has to do with Frances McDormand is a bookkeeper, I guess, or assistant for the James Gandolfini character. He owns a department store, and I think his wife actually owns the department store, and he runs it. Anyway, it becomes pretty obvious that he's having an affair with Frances McDormand, and pretty obvious to everybody. And one thing leads to another, and Ed ends up having what he sees as a business opportunity. He needs some money, and he decides to blackmail his wife's lover, which is kind of a weird way to get some revenge and some money, too. Seems to work out all right until it doesn't, and all sorts of things result, and it's just a strange little tale of, it's almost like dominoes, yeah, where dominoes fall over and nothing that happens can be controlled.
And this strange business opportunity is actually very Hudsucker Proxy, which is the film we talked about with episode 5, because the y'all, if you recall in Hudsucker Proxy, actually no, I don't want to spoil it. Go listen to that episode, go watch that movie. But there's a very similar, very well-known and common thing in Hudsucker Proxy that they're advertising for. And in this, the big business opportunity is dry cleaning.
It certainly was not a bad idea.
No, it's a great idea. It works out. And he's just kind of, yeah, I think since he does have no passions, I think he really does want to find something he cares about.
Yeah.
And he thinks maybe this business opportunity will be that.
Well, and the guy who brings that opportunity to him, another great character actor, John Polito is his name. And he's been in a lot of the Coen brother films. He was the Italian gangster in Miller's Crossing.
Oh, right.
He was the assistant to the producer in Barton Fink. Remember the lackey?
Yes.
And he was also in Hudsucker Proxy, just briefly. And then Big Lebowski, which, again, is so amazing. He was a detective, and he plays a great... He looks like he's from that time, too. He could play a great, you know, like Akeem Tamura from Touch of Evil. Always reminds me of him, a short little guy. Just kind of always on the make. There's always something going on. Always kind of nervous, but always talking really fast. You
it's
know?
Like I can't ever see how these characters would ever fall for his shtick, because it's so obvious
so
that
shady.
He's got, yeah. But one thing you mentioned, I mean, he does look like he could fit into this era so well. And that's one of the best things about the film is I really think they got film noir right.
Yeah.
I mean, they, both in the casting, I think the people who are in this movie could have stepped out of a 1940s, 1950s film noir original. And also, obviously, their acting styles and the dialogue. And the characters,
yeah,
too. But it really, I think it's like it's not making fun of it. It's embracing.
Yeah, it's like an homage. And if you look at it throughout, I didn't know all of them, but if you look it up, you'll find them. They're references to a Raymond Chandler novel, like The Big Sleep, or The Name of the Hotel was from one of the other noir films. And they said that Shadow of a Doubt, remember that great movie with Joseph Cotten, was based, remember, because he's you're not sure about him, and it's a small town USA, this great little suburban little idyllic place, and there's these undercurrents going on. So even that they captured very well.
And I think what it is that they grew up, obviously, watching film noirs, loved them, I'm sure. Because, I mean, this had a lot of Blood Simple in it, you know?
Yes.
Except it looked a lot better because it was a higher budget, it was in black and white, and it was even more noir-y. But yeah, I think that after making such a successful film with O Brother, Where Art Thou, the studios gave them a good amount of money and said, do whatever, we trust you. They did this. It wasn't as successful as their last one or many of their other ones. I don't think this film made a ton, but it's a weird movie, but it works. It definitely works. And yeah, I don't think it was making fun of the film noir genre at all.
Oh no, not at all. And I mean, I think it was not really even making fun of the characters.
No.
I mean, I think it was... You had a sense, I mean, I guess the best thing about it, and again, this is true to film noir too, is everybody ends up getting what they deserve.
Yes.
And it's not necessarily, I mean, it's just natural for people when we're watching a movie, the protagonist becomes a hero in a way. We're always kind of rooting for that main character.
Yeah.
But even when they're really bad, and we just finished watching Succession, that's a great example of you're kind of rooting for the Roy kids, and yet they're so bad. Well, this is one where there are quite a few bad people in it, but you kind of want at least one or two of them to end up okay. But they do some bad things, and ultimately it catches up with them.
Yeah, and I think Billy Bob Thornton in this, I mean, he looks like an old-timey movie star.
He does.
He looks great in this. It's really shocking how crazy good he was in this. Was this pre or post or during the whole Angelina Jolie drinking each other's blood thing.
It's from 2000, 2001. It's after. Yeah, that was in the 90s, I think.
Now, didn't he win an Oscar for Sling Blade, or was he just nominated?
Yeah, that was something else.
It's so weird.
He didn't win? Because I know he's nominated, though.
I don't think so.
I never thought of him as a serious actor, because the only thing I knew about him from back in the day was the whole Angelina Jolie madness. But he's really good, and he's in a lot of things. So I should not discredit him.
He won for best screenplay, because he adapted screenplay. He
really? Okay, that's it. Okay, I knew.
And that was 96. So this was a few years after that. 5 years after.
Good for him.
So, but the other thing I was going to mention is they bring back the great Roger Deakins for cinematography. Talk about a dark film. Literally, you cannot see the faces of the main people in several occasions. Carter Burwell did the music. Fantastic combination of those two. And you want to mention?
Well, I will say, though, the cinematography, you saying that you can't see the faces, it's very different than the problem that our modern films right now are running into. A lot of film Twitter is always making fun of these, especially the Disney remakes, like the Little Mermaid movie and the Peter Pan movie and stuff like that. In the trailers, they're just so dark. Like, you literally can't see anything. And this is intentionally shadowed because, you know, Humphrey Bogart used to be shadowed in his film noirs.
And so it's really to make a statement.
Yes,
I mean,
it is.
It's an atmospheric thing.
It is. But yeah, the score, Carter Burwell, oh my, what a beautiful score. We put this movie on while we were getting our food ready and all that. So we just kept hearing the score over and over again on the title card because we used a DVD to watch this because we're old-fashioned.
But that stands for digital video disc.
Yes, it does. But wow, that's a beautiful score. It's been running through my head all day. And also the use of Beethoven in this is beautiful.
Yes,
good stuff.
It is.
That guy knew how to compose.
I think he may have a future.
Yeah, I think he may have a future.
And as usual, in addition to the, you know, the humor, intentional and unintentional, that's displayed throughout. There's a desk. You know, we've talked about this before. A desk figures prominently in just about every Coen Brothers film. And in this case, because it involves somebody sitting behind it who has power and somebody across from it who's not. And this has fatal consequences for one of the people in that scene. We won't say who. And then as far as how dark it is, no spoilers on the ending, but
definitely the darkest ending of any.
Let me say, just put it this way:
from the Coen Brothers,
when the ending involves an electric chair, yeah, it's not the romantic comedy you think it might be.
Oh, and also one more thing about trigger warning, maybe, but because I think they tried to stay true to that era, they were recalling there are terms that are used that are certainly not politically correct for certain ethnic groups.
As the dude's friend Walter would say, that's not the correct nomenclature.
Yeah.
1,000%. One of my favorite lines in the film, because again, this is a Coen Brother film, so the script is amazing and tight and everything, involves when the lawyer of Ed, I almost forgot his name. That's how forgettable he is, but it's intentional. In the film, people are always asking like, oh, and who is this again? Like they can't remember him, which is kind of a joke. But basically, he has a lawyer representing him for something. And the narration in this film is really good. A lot of Coen Brother films narrate, but I think this one was especially spot on just because this character doesn't say anything in his day-to-day life, so it was nice to see what he's saying in his head. At one point, he says, after the lawyer gives his big speech or whatever, he just says, he told them to look not at the facts, but at the meaning of the facts. And then he said the facts had no meaning. It was a pretty good speech. And I feel like that's very lawyer in general.
Yeah, and one last thing.
And the lawyer, he was great, too.
He was really good, though I hated him.
Yeah, Tony Shalhoub. Great, yeah. Tony Shalhoub. One more thing before we get to ratings. But I almost forgot. How could I forget? The UFO angle.
Oh,
you know,
yes.
I have an interest in ancient astronaut theorists. I am not one myself. But this brought in...
You've watched Ancient Aliens, like...
Yeah.
For 20 years, but only like once a month.
Yes, but I'm always finding something new, even in the ones I've seen.
But he's skeptical.
Yeah, yeah, you have to be skeptical. Anyway, but it touched on that post-war, not just the film noir aspects, but there are UFOs in this, right? Or there's talk of them, and that was, you can imagine, post-war, the communists, there's all these, you know, Red Scares and all sorts of things going on, uncertainty. But it's so funny. It might be the only movie they have that has a UFO in it, you know?
I know.
Yeah, I feel like next this Coen Brothers need to make a space movie or something.
Yeah,
that'd
why
be
not?
Crazy.
But even that was true to the space movies of the time, you know, this idea of UFOs. That's where they started, you know, back then. And
it was more like the paranoia of the age.
Correct.
You know,
yes,
I mean, about how people imagined that, UFOs played a part in their life.
All right. Should we get to ratings?
Yeah, sure. How many cigar knives? That's a confusing thing, but it plays a key role in this film. How many cigar knives would you give the man who wasn't there?
Out of five? Mm-hmm. I think I would give it a solid 3.5 cigar knife.
Yes, and I think I'd probably give it a 3.5 too. I think that's good. It was a good movie. It certainly wasn't the Coen Brothers' best, but just like so many we've seen in this series, I liked it a lot better seeing it again than I did the first time I watched it.
And I was also thinking 3.5, so we have a unanimous 3.5. One thing I will say also is that the scenes in the barbershop are probably my favorite just because they look so good. The way they capture him cutting hair, it's pretty nice. It looks, I mean, that's all to Roger Deakins, I guess, but it looks really good. And there's a lot of hilarious dialogue in the barbershop. And something that we noticed, or at least the Coen brothers noticed, I don't know, is just like the chatty barber. That seems to always be, that's a real life thing. And it's...
it gets irritating.
Yeah, it's so, so funny.
Yeah, at one point he hires one, and he hired him because he wasn't talking very much, but he said he must have been saving all those words up for when he got behind the chair, because all he would do is talk, you know?
Yes.
Exactly. But follow us on Instagram at StrangeLoveOfMedia. Visit our website, StrangeLoveOfMovies.com. Thank you for listening to episode 9 of our Coen Brothers series with The Man Who Wasn't There. We are halfway through. Isn't that crazy?
That's amazing.
Next up will be Intolerable Cruelty, which is a lesser-known Coen Brothers film, but starring George Clooney and Catherine Zeta-Jones, so it's a pretty stellar cast. But we will see you then, and for now, try to stay out of trouble. Try to not end up how the man who wasn't there ended up. Spoiler alert.
Amen.
Bye, guys.